On this ninth day of July, 2011, in Toronto, Canada, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 13, Indra Afflicted by Sinful Reaction. Text number 3. Sri Rajo Vacha, Indrasya Nivritir Hetum, Srotum Ichami Bomune, Yena san sukino deva,
Yena san sukino deva,
Hare dukkam kuto mabat,
Hare dukkam kuto mabat.
Oh, okay. One more time. Sri Rajo Vacha,
Sri Rajo Vacha,
Indrasya Nivritir Hetum,
Indrasya Nivritir Hetum,
Shottam Icchami Bomune,
Shottam Icchami Bomune,
Yena san sukino deva,
Yena san sukino deva,
Hare dukkam kuto bhavat,
Hare dukkam kuto bhavat.
Translation: Maharaj Parikshit inquired from Shukadev Goswami, O great sage, what was the reason for Indra's unhappiness? I wish to hear about this. When he killed Vritrasura, all the demigods were extremely happy. Why then was Indra himself unhappy? Purport. This, of course, is a very intelligent question. When a demon is killed, certainly all the demigods are happy. In this case, however, when all the demigods were happy because of Vritrasura's having been killed, Indra was unhappy. Why? It may be suggested that Indra was unhappy because he knew that he had killed a great devotee and Brahman. Vritrasura outwardly appeared to be a demon, but inwardly he was a great devotee and therefore a great Brahmana. Herein it is clearly indicated that a person who is not at all demoniac, such as Prahlad Maharaj and Bali Maharaj, may outwardly be a demon or be born in a family of demons. Therefore, in terms of real culture, one should not be considered a demigod or demon simply according to birth. In his dealings while fighting with Indra, Vritrasura proved himself a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Furthermore, as soon as he finished fighting with Indra and was apparently killed, Vritrasura was transferred to Vaikuntha Loka to become an associate of Sankarsan. Indra knew this, and therefore he was morose at having killed such a demon, who was actually a Vaishnav or a Brahman. A Vaishnav is already a Brahman, although a Brahman may not be a Vaishnav. The Padma Puran says, Shat karma nipano vipro mantra tantra visharadaha avaishnavo guru nasyad vaishnavak shvapacho guruhu. One may be a Brahman in terms of his culture and family and may be expert in Vedic knowledge, mantra, tantra, visharada. But if he is not a Vaishnav, he cannot be a guru. This means that an expert Brahman may not be a Vaishnav, but a Vaishnav is already a Brahman. A millionaire may very easily possess hundreds and thousands of dollars, but a person with hundreds and thousands of dollars is not necessarily a millionaire. Vritrasura was a perfect Vaishnav, and therefore he was also a Brahman. Om Jnana Tamarandasya Jnanandana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmidatam Mena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, King Parikh here is asking Shukadeva Goswami why Indra was unhappy. And we learn from the purport that Indra was aware of what he'd done. Indra was kind of in a conundrum. This happens when you offend the Vaishnavas. We were discussing yesterday how there's a chain reaction that occurs. And we saw that the chain reaction was that Indra committed a further offense by killing Vishwarup. And this created disaster, near disaster for the demigods, because Tvashta, the father of Vishwarup, was very angry. And he created what he thought was a demon who would kill Indra, but turned out to be a devotee with a demon exterior who was killed by Indra because he chanted one syllable wrong. But be that as it may, you can see all of the trouble that ensued from these great offenses against Vaishnavas and Brahmins. So this is the characteristic of Indra. Indra tends to be overwhelmed by his wealth, by the strength of his senses. It's not an accident that his name is Indra and that the word for senses is Indriya. You know? And when he's overwhelmed by his senses, he loses all discrimination. Several instances, the most famous one of which, Govardhan, right? He was used to getting all of his offerings from the cowherds and sending the rain. But Krishna wanted to do several things at once. This is what it means to be expert. Krishna is the most expert, so he does many things with one action, with one pastime. So with the Govardhan Leela, he wanted to chastise Indra. He wanted to bring him back. He wanted to destroy the mountain of his false pride for his own good. At the same time, he wanted to engage in this wonderful Leela with his friends and relatives and lovers there in Vrindavan. Now, if you think about it, at Govardhan Leela, lifting that hill was the first time that Krishna really showed his to all the residents of Vrindavan his protecting quality, his protecting desire of all of the residents. He had shown that what was happening earlier, that he would kill a demon out in the forest, right? Agasura or Bakasura. But not everybody would see that. The boys would see, and they would come back and they would tell about it, but a lot of people didn't believe it, you know. That this is because Krishna is just a little boy. How could he kill all these big demons? Shakatasura, that looked like an accident. Trinavarta, that was just good luck. Putana, who knows what happened, you know what I mean? So Krishna was kind of, he was displaying to a few, but not to everybody, his wonderful power and qualities. You know? So Govardhan Leela was a chance that every single entity in Vrindavan, the cowherds, their wives, the cows, everyone, was experienced Krishna's love for them, his love for them, by protecting them and being with them 7 days, solid, 24 hours, 24/7, with them as he held up that hill. And so many things were going on. Mother Yashoda, she couldn't overcome her maternal instinct, her maternal feeling that Krishna needs protection. He's my helpless boy, you know. So she was chastising the other cowards. Why don't you help him? Hold up the hill. He's just a young boy. And that's why you see the paintings where they're holding up with their stick. You know, he's hungry. There's one pastime where Rupa Goswami describes how she's feeding him with yogurt. And so that'll have some sustenance. 7 days, you know, he has to eat something like that. You know. So this is her. And Radharani, you know, is looking at Krishna, you know. And he's trembling, you know, that pastime in Nectar Devotion, where he starts trembling in ecstasy and the whole hill is shaking. And everyone's wondering what's going to happen. So many things are happening under that hill. But it's all caused, you know, Krishna engineered it because he knew that Indra would react the way he did. He was completely covered. He says, those foolish cowherds, they took that, he's just a little boy. How could they take his advice? You know, Krishna very expertly spoke to Nanda and the elders and convinced them that you don't have to worship Indra. He's forced by your karma. It's karma mimamsa. He's preaching pure karma mimamsa philosophy, which is fallacious. But he's convincing them that karma is supreme. We're very pious. We do our duties. Therefore, the rain must come. What does Indra have to do with it? He's just a functionary. It's like if you go to the DMV, we call it DMV, the Department of Motor Vehicles. Maybe you call it that. So you go there, you pay your fee for the license and everything. You don't have to worship the clerk. You don't have to make sure that they like you. They have a function to perform, right? And if they don't do it, they're in trouble. So they, you know, it's not a personal thing. So he was preaching this. And therefore, forget about Indra. Take this paraphernalia you've collected and worship the Govardhan Hill and the cows and the Brahmins, and this will please me very much. So, of course, they all loved Krishna, and they did it. So Indra, he's insulting Krishna. He's just a talkative, foolish young boy, and they took his advice, I'll show them. And so he took these Samvartika clouds, you know, he ordered them untimely. Those clouds are meant for the end of the universe. When there's a huge inundation, first is the fire and then the inundation, to flood everything. So he used that. It was like the ultimate weapon he had, you know, the Samvartika clouds. You go and you devastate Vrindavan, you know, teach them a lesson. So now this is the very same Indra. You know, Indra has a responsible position. He's in charge of the heavenly planets, in charge of the weather. You know, he's a devotee. He's a devotee of Krishna. But he lost it due to that false pride. And he needed to be brought down low, which he was. And then afterward, in a secluded place, so he wouldn't be too embarrassed, you know, he went to offer prayers to Indra and bathed him with the milk, you know, and with the Surabhi cow offered the milk. He offered the heavenly planet Ganges coming through the trunk of the elephant, Airavata, Abhishek, you know. So then he was very solicitous. Oh, please forgive me, you know, and he offered these beautiful prayers. Then a little while later, Parijata flower. Krishna goes to get the... He returned the earrings to Aditi that had been stolen. That was part of it. And he wanted, you know, Satyabhama, who was very fiery. You know, she was a little envious of Rukmini. She had the Parijata flower. So he said, give me a... He says, you want a whole tree. So, it's Krishna. He wanted the tree. No. You can't take the Parijata. A little battle there. The same Indra, who had just offered the prayers a little while earlier, you see? And when Maharaj Prithu wanted to offer 100 horse sacrifices. And Prithu is Shaktivesh, you know. What's the problem? You know, he doesn't want your position. No, he can't offer that 100th horse sacrifice. You remember? So Indra disguises himself as a sannyasi and steals the final horse. And Prithu is pacified. Okay, who cares? You know. But Indra lost it again. And Prabhupada says in that purport that this is the beginning of the fake sannyasis. You know, the sannyasi is misusing the sannyasa ashram for material gain. So the moral here, the underlying idea, is that Indra, who is has these powerful senses, they overcome his intelligence. Just like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, very important section in the second chapter. Dhyayato vishayan pungsa sangas teshu vijayate. Sangat sanjayate kama, kama krodha vijayate. Krodat bhavati sammoha. So just think of this procession, a progression in relation to Indra. Indra, he was, in this pastime, which is just ending now, he was overwhelmed with lust, material desire, and therefore he was attached. He was attached to his kingdom, to the opulence, the whole thing. And he allowed that. Krishna says you get attached and you get kama, and from that comes anger. Now the anger comes when there's frustration, but even without the anger, some moha, one can be completely bewildered. So Indra was completely bewildered in this pastime about the relationship with the spiritual master. He forgot, and at forgetting even for a moment that relationship, Brihaspati chastise him, just as Indra did. Brihaspati's technique was to just leave. You know, and the demigods were helpless before the onslaught of the demons because of that. So in the Govardhan Leela, he was also, you know, lusty Indra. He did become angry, right? He became angry when he was insulted, what he thought so was an insult. And again, Krodha Bhavati Sammoha. Sammoha Smriti Vibhrama. He lost his memory. He forgot everything. And he had to be chastised and brought back to his natural form. So this is important for us, is that there's a constant battle, which we're striving to be pure devotees. We should want to become pure devotees. That's a goal. Pure devotees means that every moment of the day, we're remembering Krishna, and we're positively doing what we can to serve him at that moment, with whatever facility we have. A pure devotion. Anyabhilasha dasunyam. No material desire, and always serving Krishna favorably. You know? So what is it that prevents us from doing that? Well, we're allowing the senses to infect the mind. Instead of that meditation on Krishna, dhyayato vishayan pungsa. We tend to meditate on the objects of the senses. Or we allow memories to overtake us, right? And we're enjoying on the subtle platform in that way. This is the sadhana that we have, the battle that we have. To always keep Krishna in the front and having a positive, intense remembrance and sense of urgency of service to Krishna. You know, that's the sadhana that we have. And all of these means, the chanting of the holy name, the deities, these are to help us reach that state. So that's the lesson. And otherwise, you get entangled and you find yourself... One of the dangers of being lax in this regard is that you become prone to offense. We talk about every morning, right? We're reciting these 10 offenses. So one may think, well, I'm not gonna let any of those happen, you know, especially offending a devotee or the spiritual master. It'll never happen to me. That's just out of the question. But remember that when we let the senses go and we get into sense gratification, you lose your memory, just like Indra. You lose your discrimination, you know, what's to be done and what's not to be done. And you can be overtaken by this desire or by anger. And suddenly you've committed an offense. Indra was worried. This is why the demigods were happy. They got their kingdom back. Vritrasura was killed. But Indra was conscious of having killed a Brahmin. What could be a greater offense? And a Vaishnav. So he couldn't be happy. And that'll happen for us too. If we offend Vaishnavs, we'll find that no matter what we do, we can't be happy in devotional service. That'll be impinging on our consciousness. Unless we liquidate the aparad, we apologize, we bow down like that. So these offenses are extremely important to avoid because they cut into the enthusiasm that we have for devotional service. And in an extreme case, just like a disease, you know, there's slight disease and then there's chronic or acute disease. In extreme case, the aparad can take us right out of the association of devotees because we're not comfortable. We're not comfortable amongst devotees because we have an offensive mentality, you know, that's infected us. So we have to be very careful. There's a progression. There's a whole progression here that Indra went through until finally now he's trying to neutralize the whole thing and, you know, he goes into the Manasa Sarovara, he lives 1,000 years. You know, a difficult situation he put himself into. Finally, he was neutralized, able to resume his duties. Meanwhile, the person who took over his post was approaching his wife. You know, Indra's wife. He couldn't do anything. He's stuck in the lotus stalk. All because of the offenses. So that's one of the lessons here. Yesterday we were talking about the different lessons that come. So let's go through. Now one of the points Prabhupada makes here is that we can't judge by the outside. You know, someone may even be born in a demoniac body or a demoniac family, but they're devotees. This Vritrasura, we know, is actually Chitraketu. You know, and he just had to fulfill that role of Vritrasura, and then after dying, go back to Godhead. And Prabhupada explains it. That's what happened. So he was in good shape, you know. But Indra was in trouble. So Prabhupada gives the example of Prahlad Maharaj and Bali. They appeared in the Daitya dynasty, but they were the greatest devotees. Now Prahlad manifested it from birth, from before birth. But Bali, it took a little while. You know, Bali had to encounter Vamana, Dev, in order for his actual devotional nature to come out. So in the same way, we can look back on our lives, some of us. I can certainly look back. I said, my life was in the 16th chapter of the Gita. You know, I'll be honest with you, you know. I didn't have any devotional qualities. I didn't have any good birth, a good association, or anything. I was a total atheist, you know. But by the contact with the pure devotee, you know, the devotion which is there in everyone's heart is coming out. You know, it's starting to come out. In other words, I'm not an out-and-out demon as I was before. So, in a sense, everyone is like that. You know, some are really devotees, and they appear just like Prahlad. Some, like Bali, are definitely devotees, you know, great devotees. But it takes a little while for it to come out, and so that's a great faith. We look out on in this world, you know, thousands and millions of people, but we should know that every one of them is a devotee, potential devotee. In their very nature, their sarup, they're devotees. You know, nitya siddha Krishna prem sadhika bonoi. That this eternal perfection of Krishna prema is there in the heart of everyone. And it's not something that's artificial, that is brought from outside. By the purification of the heart, shuddha chitte, by the process of hearing, chiefly, and chanting, etc. Shravanadi, hearing, etc. Kodayeyu doi, that love, that Krishna prema awakens. So this is very encouraging, is that we have the perfection within ourselves. It's already there. We just need to follow the purification process nicely. And not, you know, with one hand we're cleaning and the other hand we're pouring the dirt on it. You know, this is a problem. If you're not careful in your sadhana, then, you know, you're lucky if you keep your head above water. Okay, you know, you're chanting, you're doing your thing. But then, parts of your day, you're again doing impure things that make slow the process. Two steps forward, one step back. Some days it's one step forward, two steps back. So in this way, you're not making any advancement. You're going through the. So there's so many instructions. You know, the Upadeshamrita, the Bhagavad, that where we can measure and see: are we actually advancing? Are we doing the right thing? You know, we know, okay, I have to refine this process. So, you know, I love this section of the 16th chapter. Or at the end of the 16th chapter, Krishna sums it up, you know. That life in this material world is hellish. You know, whether you're literally in hell or you're just living in an ordinary life, in so-called ordinary life in this material world. I was thinking this morning, there are so many parts of this world that are already so hellish. The Congo. Can one even imagine, you know, being born in such an environment, you know? So, at the end of the 16th chapter, Krishna describes that for one who's an inveterate demon, asura, he casts them down into lower species and, you know, virtually forever, they're, you know, not forever, but for a long, long time, they don't come up. Due to the sinful activities, the demonic mentality outlined there. So he says, he winds it up. He says, there's three gates. There's three gates leading to hell. Trivadam, Narakasedam, Dwaram Nashanam Atmanah. Kama, Krodas, Tata, Lobas, Tasmar, Eta, Trayang, Chajit. The three gates are, in this verse, Kama, Krodas, lust, anger, and greed. Lust, anger, and greed. I was thinking about greed today. You know, sometimes these thoughts come as you're chanting. And just see, you know, what we're going through this worldwide recession and all of these billions and trillions of dollars being wasted, you know. How does that happen? You know, people accumulate the wealth, and you know, the people who are just focused on that. And that by that wealth, they get power, so they get more wealth. And more wealth. A million is nothing. 10 million. If I have 10 million, maybe I can get 100 million. And I'll be one of the elite. I have 100 million, but look at him, he's got 3 billion. Okay, maybe I can be a billionaire. I'll be one of the real elite, only the 100 people in the world. You know, and that doesn't end. And remember this, is that Aishwarya comes from the word Ishwara. They're trying to be God. Now, I'm assuming no one is a billionaire in this room. But just imagine for a moment, if you had $1 billion that was under your control. What that would do to your consciousness. First of all, to get that billion, you have to like climb, you know, you have to be a demon practically. But suppose you just have $1 billion. Now suddenly you have so many things that you can do, you know, with that billion. You can buy armies with it. You know, you can control this, you can enjoy this, you can do so many things. It will change your whole mentality. And if one is not a devotee, you know, and very few real devotees who have money like that, Ambarish And there's a few in India who are very wealthy, and they're also, you know, Vaishnavs, they give to the temple. But generally speaking, it's not so. So that's why the Bhagavatam says that great wealth is the virtual death for the soul. Death for the soul. It's in the story of Avanti Brahman in the 11th canon. Very important. You know. So that Aishwarya and that Ishwara, so this greed factor takes over. And one may not have been a demon, but he becomes a demon because suddenly you have all of this wealth, you know. So that's one of the gates is greed. You know, kama, krodha, lobha. They're connected. Kama leads to krodha and lobha. All right, so suppose we've avoided this. So, what is that? I forget the Sanskrit of the next verse. But the wise soul who's avoided these three, atmana acharatya shreya, he acts for shreya. He always acts for his own good. One who has avoided these three gates will work for his own good. For his elevation, for the elevation of others. Shreya, actually. And then he says, going back, you know, because they sometimes go forward and then gives the contrast. This is how you learn, you know, by seeing the contrast. Yakshasta vidim utsraja vartate kamakarataha nasa siddham avapnoti nasukham na paramgati. How can one learn how to avoid these gates? From the Shastra. And from those who are living Shastra. The spiritual masters, the Acharyas. See, the word Acharya is so important. It means behavior. It all is evidenced by what you actually do. Someone may claim to be a very great saintly person. But Krishna speaks about them in the 16th chapter too. That the demons, they perform sacrifices and religious ceremonies in name only. Just to look good. Like the mafia. You know, they'll go to church. Oh yes, they're churchgoers, you know. And then they're giving out a contract and something, you know. So this is, so acharat, as they actually, you know, act. So where do you find that? From the Shastra. So one who gives up the Shastra, vidhi, the instructions of Shastra, and continues to act on the basis of whim, of lust, kama karataha, then he can't get perfection. That's the siddham of apnoti. Cannot be happy. Cannot go to the ultimate goal. He's doomed. You do. You have to consult the Shastra and the devotees. So therefore, the last verse is so key for us. It really is key. Tasmat Shastram Pramanam Te Karya Karya Vivastito. Just that one line. Let's think about it. Therefore, one has to take the Shastra, the books that Srila Prabhupada has given us, as the Pramana, as the evidence of what to do and what not to do. Karya Akarya Vivastito. How you determine what to do and what not to do. But they doesn't leave it at that. That's half the verse. And having determined that, yatva shastra vadanoktam karma karma, you actually have to act on the basis of that. Because some can know the shastra very well. I know exactly what to do and what not to do, but I don't actually do it. I know, but I don't act. So Krishna's nailing it on the last line. He says that having understood what to do and what not to do from the shastra, one should actually act in such that way as a matter of duty. This is the way to avoid those three gates. So Indra, he sometimes slips. He's a devotee. He'll always be a devotee. But he sometimes lets the lust get too much to him. You know, he has that history. And so he has to be chastised and brought back into it. So we can avoid that, you know, difficulty, you know. Because for us, it'll be another birth, maybe, that we have to be brought back and chastised, you know. Rather, we should try to follow these four verses at the end of the 16th chapter. Don't fall into those gates. You know, let's call them traps. He calls them dwara, but they're abyss. You know, the abyss is there to open up to go down. That's what he's talking about. Dwaram, kama, krodha, and lobha. You know, avoid those. By consulting Shastra, taking a good association, becoming spiritually strong in the association of devotees, so we'll have the strength of will and faith in order to follow the Shastra, and then we can attain perfection, happiness, and the supreme goal. Thank you very much for your attention. Any discussion on these points? Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you for a wonderful class.
I'm sorry, loud?
Thank you for a wonderful class. I have several questions. So, first is on the offenses. How do we know if we have or we are committing offenses in an unknowingly manner, and how to act on it?
Okay, I'll repeat. The question was, how do we know that we're committing offenses unknowingly? Well, that's kind of an oxymoron. You don't know. We may be committing offenses. That's why we have so many functions where, you know, we offer obeisance to the devotees. We try to find ways of serving the devotees. I once had a very nice encounter with a devotee on a train. I was traveling from Mayapur to Hyderabad in 1975. This was during the time of the opening of the Krishna Balaram Temple. I was blessed to be there at that time. Prabhupada was there. And you know, I was only 2 years in the movement. This devotee was like a senior devotee, maybe 4 years in the movement. And so I was getting into some kind of criticism. It wasn't like really heavy, but it was criticism of some devotee, you know. And he stopped me short and he said, "Always try to glorify. If you're always glorifying the devotees, then that mood of criticism will never enter you, you know." So this is a very wise thing. Look for ways of praising the devotees. You'll notice, I've always noticed about Radhanath Swami, that he loves to praise the devotees. He'll give whole classes, you know, just on one devotee. I remember one devotee passed away, Abhiram Thakur. And he would go, you know, his tour, he was giving classes just on that devotee, the glories of that devotee. And it's a very good example. In this way, you avoid even the possible offense, you know. And if there's some inadvertent thing that you do, then devotees forgive it. You know, they say, "Oh, this is just an accident. Think nothing of it," you know. So that's a kind of a, what do you call it? A vaccine, you know, against a disease. Because we have that critical tendency. It's kind of born with the, you know, the false ego. The false ego means I'm very great, and in order for me to be even greater, others have to go down, right? So the devotee wants to be just the opposite. Others are very great, I'm the lowest. And you see that the greatest devotees, they think like that, and they talk like that. And you're always amazed when you read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna's Kaviraj. He said, "Oh, I'm the lowest. Anyone who chants my name goes to hell. I'm lower than this worm and stool." He's actually thinking like that. But somehow or other, Madana Gopal, I was just reading in chapter 8, very nice chapter, by the way, I highly recommend it, Adi Leela chapter 8. It's all about the chanting of the holy name and about him getting the blessings to write the Chaitanya Charitamrita. But there's a lot in there about the chanting and the Panchatattva and so many things. Panchatattva chapter 7, but he talks about Panchatattva also in the 8th chapter. We can read together. So he's, you know, describing how he got the blessing to write the CC. But that mood of that, "Oh, let me find some way to serve." I always see so many the blissful devotees. The most blissful devotees are the ones who are serving the other devotees, you know, in my years of this kind. You know, they're very, you don't even know their name. They've been serving for so many years in some temple somewhere, you know. But they look very blissful. And you can see that, you know, they're just serving the devotees. They love to serve prasadam, you know, do some other things like that. So that kind of thing ensures against offense. And if some indiscretion happens, you know, then you're forgiven, you know, because your mood is anything but offensive, just the opposite. So that was one thing. There was another one?
Like, when we are in a situation, say, I'm married, so we have to correct wife or children when they go wrong, right? So you are in a position to correct them and put them on the right path and keep on inspiring them into their Krishna consciousness. So in the process of correction, sometimes, although we know they are devotees, we might be getting a bit harsh at some times or committing offenses. So how do we act on it when we are in a correcting position and still we have to be correct?
So the question was, in a family situation where, say, the husband is meant to correct the children, the wife, and help them in their Krishna consciousness, it may be a little bit stern or harsh. How do we avoid committing offense in that context? Well, as in so many other things, the real acid test, so to speak, the essence is the mood that you do it in and the motive that you're doing it. And Prabhupada was sometimes very heavy, you know, and became very angry with the disciples when they did something, you know, seriously wrong. And but you can see, you know, the devotees who are intelligent, you know, they welcome that. You know, that Prabhupada cared enough, you know, to get angry with you. Because the worst thing is that to be ignored. You know, just go. So, and you could see that there was no false ego involved, because at the next moment, Prabhupada would say, praising the very same devotee for something else, or he was just back in a very sattvic, calm, self-contained position. If someone is really angry and is out of false ego, then that pollutes the whole body, you know, and infects them, you know, for hours or days, you know, it can be. You know what I'm saying? It's a whole different thing. So it's like being used as a tool, the anger or the harsh words. Krishna, the first thing he says in the Bhagavad Gita, he chastises Arjuna. Ashochanam ashochasvam. You're speaking learned words, but you're lamenting for what's not worthy of lamentation. So he's calling him a fool, you know, basically. But Arjuna is not walking off in a huff. You know, he's welcoming that. And this is part of what it means to be in position of a guru, because that's the position of the husband being. So the idea is that all the other things that you do, in other words, it's very important that when they do something right, you're praising them and they feel that, you know, nectarian thing. It's true of any teaching situation. So then they understand, oh, this is done out of love. This is done out of concern. Then it can be done. And there's no question of offense. It's not an offense. It's actually a service. You know, Prabhupada tells a story. Sorry, I can never see this. I guess we have a little time. I get it here. There was once this orphan. His parents died, and he was taken in by his aunt. This is in India. And the aunt was very pampered this child, this boy, and never chastised him for anything. You know, and he would do so much mischief, and she never chastised him because she wanted to. She had that idea that she would do that. So he grew up, and he became a criminal. And eventually he killed somebody. And so he was going to be executed. So, of course, the aunt was distraught and everything. So then he's on the gallows, practically, you know. And he requests that, I just want to say one thing to my aunt, you know, who raised me. I said, okay, you can say one more thing. So he asked her to come close. And I guess this is a true story because it's kind of ghastly. He bit off her ear. And she's screaming, yelling, why did you do this? You know, because you never corrected me, you know? In other words, it has to be the correction and the discipline, to spare the rod and spoil the child, you know? So that's a service, that's an act of love for someone to correct the subordinate and set them right. Because you've come into this world, you're kind of a clean slate. If you get into bad association, you're going to go bad, you know? So those who can give us good association and guide us away from that, they are friends. They are real friends. Just like the sadhus. They're meant to cut, you know, with their cutting words. The illusion, you know, the cocoon of it's, everything is okay in this world. It's not okay, you know. So the sadhus cut through that. I think Bhakti Vikaswami was here recently. He has that mood, you know. Wake you up from, you know. It's good. And this disciple has it too. Mahatattva. I live with him. Anyway, it's necessary. So don't worry about that, but just make sure that the motive is one of concern and love, and they'll feel that. That will come through. And in the next moment, you know, you're encouraging, you know, something. Any other question, comment on this point? Ananda, Gauranga Prabhu.
So before the Govardhan Hill last time.
Before the Govardhan.
How does Indra come and take
You mean how? Well, how did the demigods in general take their offerings, which apparently is what they live on? You know, there's what was I reading recently the past time that if they don't get those offerings, if they're stolen, you know, then they don't eat, and so you know they, how, you know, because clearly it's there. It's just like on the altar, you know. But I don't know, you know. I'd be honest with you. Because it's all over. We read it everywhere that they're getting their offerings, you know, and some of them are being given here and so forth, you know. And so there's a way in which they're getting them, but it's beyond me. Worry about it. Yes, yes. The point is, that's mentioned in the Gita. It's mentioned in the Gita. Oh, I'm sorry. The question? Yeah. All right, so the first question was, how does Indra actually get the offerings? In other words, all these, the previous years before the Govardhan Leela, the cowherds were making all these offerings, the sacrifice. And Indra was enjoying the remnants of the sacrifice, and he was sending the rain, supposedly. You know, that's going on. So that's true for in general, that Krishna says in the third chapter, you offer to the gods will offer back to you, everyone will be in prosperity, right? But if you don't, then you're a thief, right? If you don't recognize the gods, they're controlling the sun and the wind and everything, what to speak of, all the other little things, you know, that we do. Then you're a thief, you can never be happy, and you'll suffer. And what happens is, see, we have to look at over time, because I've often wondered about this, you know, living in America. Of course, now America is like the big Titanic, you know, teetering. You know, trillions of dollars, the richest country in the world, but gradually it's going down, you know. Because previous pious activities, those who are not supposed to go to the heavenly planets, they come to America. And, they'll be relatively wealthy. And people from South America, they're always aspiring, you know, to get through, you know, India, you know, for long. Now people live in India, in America for a while, they go back to India. Because America's hard to get a job. So, but it's, you have to look over a long time. You know, previous lifetimes, so much pious activity was done. And you reap it in this lifetime. So the question, well, Americans aren't doing any sacrifices. Yeah, but the people who live in America in previous life did some pious activity, may not worship the gods. Maybe they just were a very generous, you know, people. That also comes back to you in proportion. So it's a very complex thing. When you cannot untangle the skein or the web of karma. You know, how much good karma you're getting, where's the bad karma coming in? Why did I have this accident at this time? And this other person had the same accident. They're also scheduled. You know, suddenly there's a plane crash and all those people, you know, all of a sudden. Yeah. You know, their karmic, you know, chain just happened to meet at that point, and there's a wholesale payment of karma. That's why it takes the super soul to figure it all out, you know, and arrange everything so everyone's getting their just desserts at the right time. So, but... you know, we don't need to, as you say, we don't need to worry about the karma. We don't have to worry about all of the, you know, the little demigods that are controlling the blinking of the eyes and everything. If you water the root of the tree, then all the demigods are worshipped. They become happy. You know? And so that's the magic of Krishna consciousness. Everything is solved. Everything is solved by Krishna consciousness. It is the true and the one and only panacea for all ills, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, everything taken care of. Any other comments or questions? I'm sorry? The time? The fan. Okay. I just asked if there are any more comments or questions. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Hare Prabhupada.